Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today's guest is the second generation leader of one of America's fastest growing commercial cleaning franchises. He's Adam Pavlitz. He's the CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems, a company his father, David, founded in 1989. What started as a single janitorial company has since grown into a franchise powerhouse, consistently ranked among the top franchise systems in the country. Adam didn't just inherit the business, he helped evolve it. With a background in Six Sigma, IT, finance, and corporate strategy, he brought a fresh perspective to operations, branding, and national expansion, guiding Anago's transition into a tech-enabled, data-driven franchise model that supports hundreds of regional units and thousands of franchisees. Adam, welcome to Growing Up B2B. So great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate you having me. Appreciate the introduction. You forgot to mention that I make a really good penne alla vodka.
We'll drop the recipe in the show notes as well. So let's get started with just from the big picture. What is Anago Cleaning Systems and what makes your franchise model so unique?
Great questions. You mentioned that we're a commercial cleaning franchise, but what's atypical for us is that we are a three-tier franchise model. So most franchises that the average person is familiar with is a two-tier franchise, right? McDonald's, right? You know that there's the people who own the restaurants, and then there's the corporate office. Ours has three tiers. So we have managed the corporate office, we have what we call a master franchise, and then we have what we call a unit franchise. Now, the easiest way to understand it is let's actually flip that upside down, right? So when I say commercial cleaning, most of your listeners are probably thinking they picture the guy with the mop in the bucket or the vacuum or something like that. That would be the unit franchisee and their team, right? Most commercial cleaning is done at night. And the unit franchise, their job essentially is to hire their crew, keep the buildings clean, manage the chemicals, the equipment, make sure the customers are happy. But the question is, where did they get all of those accounts from, right? Who is doing the sales, the marketing, the advertising, and then also who is handling all of the invoicing and collections for those customers? So that's where we've discovered with our model that you can break apart the daytime and the nighttime aspects of the commercial cleaning industry. So in our model, you have the unit franchise that's doing the nighttime cleaning, but they're actually being supported by what we call a master franchise, who is the white collar of the blue collar industry, if you will. So their sole focus is they manage the websites, hire the sales teams, manage the sales, and then ultimately support those units by doing the invoicing and collections. So they're like the daytime aspect of the commercial cleaning business. And what's cool is the unit franchise, they're getting all these customers and they have zero sales expense, zero sales staff. And then the master franchise is growing all its revenues, but it does absolutely zero cleaning in the commercial cleaning business. So it's a cool way to create a synergy where everyone's saving on overhead and not working 24/7.
That's really cool. And then they can essentially align strengths with strengths, right?
Exactly.
That's really cool. So your father founded the company in 89. Looking back, what were some of your early memories of the company back then growing up, if you will?
So my earliest memory is hilarious, actually. I remember a picture we took when we first moved to South Florida, and it's my dad. We had just moved into our house in South Florida. He had a desk he made out of like milk crates, and he's sitting there in his underwear with a legal pad going off customer names and giving them a call. He was like a pure entrepreneur. Like he was going to figure out a way to start a business no matter what. And starting out, it was in a real small office. It was literally a two-room office when it started out, and a rental place. And we're in South Florida. It was in Coral Springs, Florida. And it was just literally a two-room place. And I remember as I kept getting older throughout middle school and high school, all of a sudden the two rooms went to four rooms. The four rooms went to six or eight rooms. And just seeing it expanding across all of that. And then I was probably mid-20s. And I happened to be back over the holidays, and he goes, "Man, I think I got the tiger by the tail with this whole commercial cleaning thing. You got to come check it out." And it was about 6 months later that I ended up leaving my corporate job and joining Anago.
So clearly it wasn't always your plan to take that path.
No. I was actually, my background was corporate finance and marketing and a little bit of both actually, but my experience came through corporate finance. I was with IBM. I lived in New York. My dad would always call me the corporate bigwig. And I was there, and it was during 08, 09, and it was 09, they did a big layoff, right? The big recession that happened then. I wasn't laid off. I was one of the analysts who I was reviewing. I had no employee names. I had employee numbers. I had pay packages. Here I am, some 20 something year old kid, and I'm the one going through determining and helping determine who's getting the golden parachutes, whose parachutes are not so golden, and who's not getting a parachute. And let me tell you, man, it leaves a taste in your mouth for corporate America where you're going, man, I could easily be 20 years into my career, and then they hire the next 20 something year old kid who's deciding my fate based on a number. And that's actually what prompted the conversation with my dad. I go, maybe this isn't the avenue I thought it was going to be. But yeah, no, I never intended to join the family business. But I wound up there anyways.
I was just back from my 30th college reunion, and a dear friend of mine who I happened to be standing in line with at graduation, he'll always remind me of something that I said. I said, "I don't know exactly what I'll do next, Mike, but I'll be damned if I go to work for my old man." And then a few months later, I'm turning down a job outside of Philly to join Dalia Associates and ultimately execute a buyout.
Nice.
He reminds me of that. He's like, "Yeah, remember what you said?" I'm like, "Yeah, I know what I said." But so there you were. So it sounds like your dad wanted you to come get involved, or was he somewhat neutral about it?
I think deep down, of course, I think every father wants their son to come work with them if possible. It's the prospect of it's exciting. There was never any pressure. It wasn't like I feel like that's something I've, when people ask me about that, you go, you absolutely cannot pressure your kids where it's expected for them to join the family business. It has to be something they want. And that's frankly, for the parents' sake and the kids' sake, because everyone's just going to be miserable. If the kid wants to join, absolutely go for it. Make sure they have the education. My dad was big though. My sister also works at the business, and he was adamant before, and she came straight to Anago relatively soon, but he was adamant, both of us, he goes, "You absolutely must work for someone else first. You cannot have this be your first job, because then the only thing you know is how your dad operates. You need to know, you need to go work for some other firm, see how the business is conducted just out there in the real world. And then bring that back, and now you can really add value." So for me, I came in, and the first thing I did at Anago, I did a full like vertical and horizontal P&L and balance sheet analysis, because that's what I knew.
Yeah.
And it's like, he didn't have anybody that could do FP&A planning and stuff like that on staff. And that was what I did. And now you're adding value to the company versus just being an echo of whatever your dad's voice is saying to do, because that's all you would otherwise know.
It sounds before taking on the CEO role, you were able to bring some of that experience forward into Anago. Almost sounds like right out of the gate, you were able to do that, to bring that experience that you got. How would you say, though, that coming from corporate bigwig, right? So IBM, big corporate, to more of, I'll just say, an entrepreneurial enterprise. Talk about that. Talk about how that transition was for you. What was that like?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. When I left, I think I had mental expectations of what it would look like. And I feel like my dad really just liked to rib me about working at a corporate company like that. So He would say, when I first joined, he goes, now you've left your highfalutin finance job. It was always something. Now you've left your highfalutin finance job. So he goes, your first job at Antigo, you're going to be a telemarketer by day and a franchisee's assistant at night cleaning a daycare. It was like, I had to quite literally do everything. And,
Okay.
I would get in and I was a terrible telemarketer. I was not good at that. And this was 16 years ago. I was not good at it, but I think I had to make 10 appointments before I could move on to the next phase. And then I was cleaning a daycare, and this was like before diaper genies and stuff like that. So you have a 55 gallon garbage bag filled with dirty diapers, and you're like, take it out of here. But to do that, I did that. I did outside sales. I did customer service. I did some a little bit of franchise sales. I did all of that before I even was allowed to come to the corporate office. I did all of that in the local master franchise that he started. And then I came to the corporate office. And again, I'm still probably late 20s at this point. And the people who had owned these master franchises around the country, they'd been in business with my dad for 10 years and or more. And so it's who the heck am I, and why should I let you come to my office? So it forced me to develop like a very servant leadership role. And I feel like that's how I've continued my leadership style going forward. So it's very much like, ultimately, we're in business because of you. So how do I help you grow your business? What can I do to improve, make you more efficient, make your sales better, make your customers happier, or whatever it is? What can I do to help you grow?
And it sounds like probably by virtue of walking the path from bottom up, literally. At the company, that may have earned you some respect points too, would you say, in terms of, hey, I've done it.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
mean, yeah. I feel like you come in as the owner's son, the founder's son, and people are expecting a silver spoon. And, oh, we're going to make you the general manager. And then who the heck is this kid telling what to do? When it's, I've done this and I know this piece of equipment is better because I've scrubbed floors with it for 4 hours a night for several months. Oh, okay. You've done it all. The former president, when he retired, his name was Terry. He was a funny guy. He was from West Virginia by way of Texas. So he had this real awesome Southern accent to him. And I'm not going to even remotely attempt it, but he just had a funny sense of humor about him. And when they made me president, so I've been at the company now about six years or so. He got me a business card holder and it said, instead of president, it said PUDSOBIC. And I was like, Terry, what is this? And in his accent, he goes, it stands for poor, unfortunate, dumb SOB in charge. I was like, thank you. Feels like that some days.
For a
But
minute there, I thought you were going to say the SOB stood for son of boss,
yeah,
but
I self-censored just in case you have some
I
listeners out there.
appreciate that. So that's, and for whatever it's worth, of all the guests we've talked to, it's quite common for those that are multi-gen and are very successful, highly successful, that they walked the full path, that they started with the most basic job or execution at their organization and then laddered up from there. As did I. I was collating press kits when I was like seven, if not younger. So it's what gives you that rounded view and appreciation for what people in the field are doing and walking the walk and being able to talk the talk. So about 6 years in, you took on the CEO role then. Talk about that transition for a moment, Adam. What was that like and how did that come to be?
I think ultimately that was obviously once I got in and showed that my interest and my acumen, I think that became the plan. And it was actually the president role in 2015. It was 6 years in. I was made CEO. It was 3 years later. But I went through, like I said, getting there, right? I traveled the country. I met with all our franchisees. We implemented a lot of new marketing tactics and vendors with websites. And this was early website days, even for cleaning companies. You didn't find a cleaning company online. Where, no, they would call you. They'd go through the yellow pages, like showing my, right? But I think taking it on, I think it was interesting because I would say my first handful of years in that seat, it was like I was learning how to be the president, if that makes sense. And I think that period was just, it was one of those times where you're doing your best. You're making mistakes, Luckily, you had a family. I had a family backing. So when I would make mistakes, it was, hey, let's come talk about this. And then I think I would say my dad did a good job of, rather than calling me out, it would be, let's have a conversation aside, and then you're going to go out to everyone and make the change. And so it didn't, he was very good at making sure that as he was trying to establish my role, that his historical being the founder, being the CEO, didn't like ultimately undercut me. So he would always push decisions down. He would always let me own things when I would make mistakes. And I think there was a value to that, because otherwise it's very easy for people to go, I'm not even going to talk to this guy. I know who the founder is. I'm going to go right above your head and not bother including you. And so he was very good at going, no, did you talk to Adam about that yet? Making sure that I was always brought in and had my opinion and had my say.
And when you took on the CEO role, had your dad stepped away from the business at that point, or was he still somewhat involved?
He would come in most days, probably like 4 days a week or something like that. I joked and I said it was to r rustle papers and ruffle feathers. He had an office. He would come in at 1 o'clock, come in, aggravate somebody, and then stay in his office for a couple hours and then split at four. And obviously, I tease a little bit. I'm sure anybody who's a second gen person, that the dad getting older, coming to the office still, that was what he did. He loved to work. And he would joke. He would say, oh, I'm just trying to get away from your stepmom for a few hours or something. But he enjoyed it. He enjoyed the interactions. He was always such a gregarious guy. But no, any kind of functional day-to-day stuff at that point, he was pretty much off of, and I had taken over at that point.
Okay. I laugh a little because it sounds eerily familiar with my scenario where there was that period of time where he was kind of like part-time retired, my dad, and then we had to have another heart to heart, which was like, Dad, I love you, but I think one of us needs to maybe not be here.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
don't worry, it's you're in good hands and everything's okay. And a beautiful thing happened. He discovered retirement fully, which meant all the things that he sidelined that he wanted to do, he suddenly could do. And then I'd hardly hear from him. But it was a great next chapter for him that I think he really enjoyed. And probably not unlike your dad, it was he existed in that advisory role to me. And I would come to him and he'd always say, I don't understand the technology, the business anymore, but honestly, Adam, I was coming to him with people issues, and he was real good at those. So that's what we talk about. How do you handle this? How do you talk to somebody about that when he knew what to say?
Exactly.
When you did take on that CEO role, what were some of the first things that you did once you took on that particular leadership with it? Did you have an agenda going into that, or was it more of an organic move into that role? Did you have a kind of a game plan, if you will?
Yeah, I think it was pretty organic. By that point, when I took on the president role, the former president had retired. And then at that point, by the time I had become CEO, my dad was basically transitioning out at that point anyway. So I was already looked at as the poor, unfortunate SOB in charge. And for me, I think it was my big aha change was probably came when COVID came. I would say I was very, because I took that servant leadership approach, I was probably being more reactive than proactive. And so it was, okay, what do our franchisees need? How do we help them? And then someone would say, I need this, and we'd jump on it. And oh, I need that, and we'd jump on it. In COVID, obviously in the commercial cleaning space, it wasn't as bad a year for us as maybe fitness industry or something. Gyms closed and restaurants closed, but everything that was open needed our business. And so we had to very quickly pivot from our traditional business model to a disinfection-based model and have all the partnerships we had getting disinfection spray guns and everything like that over to us fast. And so we went from a recurring business model to a disinfection model, and we had to do it, become experts in this in 60 days. And so I remember during that period, I was on the phone with my entire franchise system twice a week. Here's what we know. Here's what we don't know. Here's what we're trying to find out. Here's what the latest is. Here's what we think you should be saying. Here's how we think you should message it. It just was nonstop. But it also showed me how much vision casting and messaging and all of that is so crucially necessary if you really want to get everyone, on the boat, rowing in the same direction, looking in the same direction. And I think that was probably a huge pivot point in terms of how I owned the CEO role.
Awesome. And would you say that was that a catalyst or one of them that kind of helped you scale and get to that next level, some of those moves, or was that more just to manage a very trying time being COVID?
Both. I think it was lessons learned from getting through that trying time that then we said we applied to how do we keep this momentum going out of COVID and going back to the reality, let's call it. And so what we did was we said, okay, we saw how much messaging and communication and everything it took to just get through this crazy period. We said, how can we use that to help grow the system? And so what we created, we ultimately created a 5-prong plan that we called the $100 million challenge. At the time, we were billing as a system coming out of COVID somewhere in the mid 60s, maybe 65, 67 million in system-wide revenue. We weren't small by any means. But we were, in terms of the franchise space, there's the McDonald's I mentioned where there's multi-billion dollars. We're nowhere near there. But I said, I want to be a $100 million brand and I want to do it within the next 2 years. So I want to grow by 50% in 2 years. And we met with our leadership team. We met with our franchise. We have a franchise advisory committee. And we said, here's what we're thinking. Here's what we want to, how do we, let's talk about this. And we messaged like crazy. Everything you heard from me, anything you heard from our leadership was always like, and that's how we're going to do this $100 million challenge. And we were able to hit that milestone in 19 months. And so it was amazing to go from, okay, now we're not just some fly on the wall. We're not just some pipsqueak. We are a $100 million franchise brand. And now I don't know if it was stupidity or brains or guts or whatever. I got out in front of my franchise system and I go, we've retooled the plan. We've added some additional layers to it. And now I want to be a $300 million brand by the end of 2028. And so we're calling that Vision 2028. We're maybe about halfway there. And the back half is always the harder half, of course. But it's one of those ones where you get off stage and you go, holy crap, did I just say that? Now we're committed now. We are committed now. But I think we're going to get there. I'm confident it's constantly messaging and making sure everyone understands what the value is to them, what the benefit is to them, what their part is, what they need to do, what they need to not do. Having one of those big visions that you're constantly messaging about, one of the most valuable things is that it easily sets up what you're going to say no to. And as someone who viewed that servant leadership approach to everything, I was always yes to everything. Help them. Yes, we're going to help you. Yes, we can do that. Yes, we can do this. And now it's, hey, that's not part of one of the pillars of the $300 million goal. And so unfortunately, we're going to have to just table that for now. And it allows you to just laser focus. And so that I've enjoyed being able to do that because now I can, and instead of being all over the place, it's like, we're going to be laser focused on this handful of things.
That's awesome. And that's some impressive and rapid growth by any standard. So when an organization is scaling as yours was and now is again, sometimes culture as well as brand consistency can become more challenging to maintain. So what are some ways that goes about protecting culture, values, and brand continuity as well as delivery of service as the organization continues to scale?
So from a culture standpoint, my dad was very smart about creating what he calls our 7 unifying principles very early on in his founding of the business. And it's number one is believe in people, and there's promote training and education, reserve the right to make mistakes. There's a lot of principles like that when you bundle it together. We were just in training this morning, actually, with some of our newest owners. And I was saying, it's like looking through a prism, right? Where everything is, there's layers to it, there's overlap to it. But when you look through the prism, you can see how it illuminates the room. I go, that's how you want to look at your business. And at the end of the day, it's always about if people are happy to be there, if people are being educated while they're there, if people feel like they're taken care of while they're working for your organization. I'm a big Simon Sinek. Everyone knows his Start With Why. Not everyone knows his other book called Leaders Eat Last. I'm a big Leaders Eat Last follower where, you know, at the end of the day, if I can take care of my team so that there's less things out there in the world, we all have our problems. We all have our life happens to everyone. We all have stuff going on when we go home. But if I can take care of as much of that as possible for my team, that when they are here, instead of having to worry about all that stuff, they can just go to work and just get stuff done. They're not worried about, you know, who's competing against who or in a bad way. They're not worried about, do I have healthcare? Do I have childcare? Do I have, no, don't worry about all that stuff. Just get here and work because we're going to help you take care of that. And so I think from that angle, it's, you eliminate a lot of those problems for your team and then they can focus on just growing your business.
Awesome. Awesome. And I knew Simon before he became Rockstar. Cool. But yeah, true to his, he was as passionate and visionary as he then as he is now. He's very true to form. He is who he is. And a neat guy. The other thing that I wanted to ask about was really technology. Technology and data, you know, obviously playing greater roles in all businesses, especially the onset of AI. How has Anago adapted to technology to enhance the franchise experience or the delivery of service?
So I think, yeah, that actually is a perfect follow-up to your last question, because that I think that it's the embracing of technology that has allowed us to, even though as we've expanded and scaled, it allows us to keep service quality in line and keep everyone happy at the highest and the lowest levels of where the technology touches. That is our angle, right? There's no one has, in terms of my competition, no one has a better mop. No one has a better vacuum. Like, we can all get the same quality technology stuff from the right vendor relationships. Where we've invested is in technology, specifically around customer service. In the commercial cleaning industry, commercial cleaning and technology, it sounds like opposites, right? Like jumbo shrimp or something, right? What is that, an oxymoron? it sounds like it's like, what? There isn't even a line. But we've invested in the technology specifically with customer service because my industry is, first of all, it's extremely fragmented, right? Usually it's Anago versus mom and pop cleaning company. And so you go, how can we make a person's experience with cleaning better? And I think for starters, you have to acknowledge what the experiences you can have are, right? So if you went to a restaurant, you can have one of three experiences. You either go in and you have a delight experience, right? The food is delicious. The waiter is amazing. You have a terrible experience. Right? Waiter's a jerk, food is cold, or you just have one of those, whatever experiences. In commercial cleaning, there are not three, there's two. You can only have two experiences with commercial cleaning. Unfortunately for us, right? No one goes, oh my goodness, this place is so clean. I'm going to get my janitor a birthday present. Oh my gosh. You're like, no, doesn't happen. Unfortunately, right? I wish it did. Occasionally, I've heard of it happening occasionally, but not as often as we'd like. Most people have one of two experiences. Either you get into your office and you don't think about the cleaning and you go, I got to work, and you get on your computer and do your thing. Or you get into your office and you go, why is my trash can still full? Or like, why does that bathroom smell so bad? What's going on here? See, we had to take a page from the fact that, like, when mistakes happen, if you can find out about it quickly, own it and rectify it quickly, that's the best time to make a friend, right? Like, we all learned about that best practices. Like, if you get a bad review online, respond fast, own it, fix it, and you might get a customer for life. And so we said, how can we use technology for that process? And so we created a proprietary software that we use for everyone called CleanCom. And so if you have an issue with your cleaning and you're an Anago client, we have a proprietary software. You take out your phone, you take a picture of whatever your issue is. You're able to send it to the cleaner. It's all private. There's no exchange of phone numbers or anything like that. So it's all private communication. It has built-in Google Translate. So you message in whatever language you speak, they can message whatever language they speak. And so it's very easy to keep the communication flowing. There's a built-in 2-hour response guarantee. So you will be responded to within 2 hours. So you're not wondering for a day or 2 days or whatever, did they get my message?
Right.
Like I said, it has the pictures, and then you're also marking what room the issue is in, so that on the back end, we're able to track what rooms are having issues, so that maybe we see that a particular franchisee has three issues in restrooms, that master franchisee is able to bring them back in and say, hey man, let's get you retrained on how to properly service restrooms so that this doesn't become a problem for you with other clients. So we call that preventive analytics. So that combination of just the fast communication and then preventing issues going forward has been huge for us. That's ultimately our edge when everyone's got the same chemical in their bucket and same vacuumer on their backs. And it's all about the people. And it boils down to what you said about our dads knowing how to handle the people in the growing technological world. At the end of the day, it's a people business.
And forgive me if this is, and I'm going down a tangent here, but I'd be very interested in your take. To what extent are you seeing the onset of robotics in your industry? Do you see that as playing a role in the foreseeable future? Is it here now? Where do you see that fitting in to the landscape?
So it's, at least in my industry, it's not as big as many. What we're seeing is, in terms of the robotics that are being used today, it's mostly for like wide open spaces. So, you know, if you have a warehouse or a big, what do you call it, like a Costco type size store, those big open aisles, you definitely can get some of these automated robotic floor scrubbers that go through. Where we're not seeing much development, and because it's frankly at this point, it's just so expensive, is in like the day-to-day cleaning, right?
Yeah.
So you see what like the Elon Musks of the world are doing with the what is it, the Optimus Prime, or whatever he's calling it, right? The Optimus robots that are like the humanoid robots.
Yeah.
All programmed to do very simple things. Like I think he had one that was making a cocktail, and it's all it's doing is this. But you go, okay, now I'm going to put it in a room that it's never been in before. And it has to sense where everything is on your desk, and it can't knock over your phone and knock the picture of your wife off and break your monitor because it turned abruptly. So I think in terms of having robots actually replace humans doing the actual typical office that most people work in, until we get the Jetsons and Rosie the Robot, we got a long time on that sense. But to the wide open, simple spaces, it's here now and just being more and more adoption as some of the bigger companies that have those are adopting the robotics.
Nice, nice. So bringing it back to family, when you sit back, what's it like to carry forward your father's legacy, both personally and professionally? How does it feel?
It depends on the day, right? Some days, so my father passed just a little over 2 years ago. And it was interesting because when that happened, right, I'm the face of the company at this point, and you're trying to grieve. It's my father I just lost at that time. But I'm the one who also has to give the speech in front of the company at the next event of here's what's going on and here's his legacy. And then I had to do it again in front of all my franchisees. And then I had to do it again at the funeral. And so on one hand, it was cathartic, and but it was also sharpening up what I wanted his legacy to be, like having to articulate it. And it boils back down to what we were talking about. It's all about the people. His legacy was, they don't know how many times he would, behind closed doors, he'd scream at me and stuff like that. That's all dads, right? But people need to know. And his legacy ultimately was that he cared about people. And for me, it's heavy because part of me is, I'm more of a tech dweeb. I'm probably robots and technology over people some days. So it forces me to reframe what's important. Even though I know what I naturally gravitate to, like numbers and technology, like, wait a minute, what would he want me to be focused on right now? And it always boils back down to people. And so it helped me refocus in that regard professionally. Personally, it's funny because when you're a young guy, your parents just embarrass you. You're like, you know, what the heck? But then you get to maybe like college age, and you find out when your buddies are like, actually, your dad's probably cooler than you are. You go, oh, wait a minute. So personally, it's just remembering all the cool times and all the fun times and all the, and honestly trying to live up to the name, right? The Pavlet's name is cooler than I am for sure. And it was because of him.
And so he was around to see a lot of that scale up, or that first wave of scale up. And just to say, I'm sure he was very proud and would still be very proud of all that you've done to carry things forward, maybe to a level that he'd not dreamed of way back when, in the founding moments there in 89. Pretty amazing. So being that like me, you're a second gen, what advice would you give to say a younger person who's at that crossroads? Do I go out on my own? Do I join the family business? What advice might you give to somebody that's standing at that crossroads right now?
So first, and I said it earlier and I'll say it again, go work for someone else. I think you'll add the most value to your family business if you're serious about it by going somewhere else and learning how some other professional system works. You need to know how the real world works. And then you can bring that back and you can add some value to the family business. And then second, I would say you really have to want it. Don't do it because you feel obligated. Don't do it because, you know, your parents are pressuring you. Do it because you really want it. If you really think you can make a difference and really think you could enjoy it, go for it. It's a labor of love for sure. There's definitely days that are awesome, and there's days where you want to, I had way more hair than this when I started. You pull out your hair on some days. Learn someone else's system first. Go get educated in the professional sense somewhere else and see if you really want to, can bring that value, and then really be passionate about it or don't do it. Those are
awesome
pieces of advice.
That's great. Thank you for that. Last question. If somebody wanted to learn more about you, Adam, or more about Anago Cleaning System, what's the best way for them to connect?
Yeah, we are all over the internet. You can check out our website. We're at anagocleaning.com. That's AnagoCleaning.com. We're on social media, on everything. So it's all at Anago Cleaning on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm personally very big on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you go on LinkedIn and type in Adam Pavlitz, feel free to shoot me a message and I'll definitely get back to you.
Awesome.
Lots of ways.
Awesome. And all that will be in the show notes as well. So Adam, thank you so much for sharing your story from growing up around the business to scaling it as CEO and now taking it even to the next level and showing how value strategy and innovation can really work together to drive that sustainable growth. So we've been speaking with Adam Pavlitz, CEO and president of Anago Cleaning Systems, a leading commercial cleaning franchise redefining what's possible in its space. And I'm Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you again, Adam. It was great having you on.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at delianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.